This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Shoya Kutin with me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh with the top business headlines of the day. Before we get into all the interesting stuff, I'll just remind you that, in fact, coming up after the 8 o'clock bulletin, even more interesting stuff. We're going to be part of our kind of celebration of Merdeka, kind of deep dive into look at our foundations as a nation. And today on the Breakfast Grill, we have Tan Sri Raymond Navaratnam, chairman of us of the ASEAN Strategy and Leadership Institute, and also Dato' Latifah Chiong Merican, and she's the deputy president of the Malaysian Economic Association. Okay, also in the news, and it's kind of international news, this has got to do with Uber. It's set to pick their new CEO today to replace co-founder Travis Kalanick.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have got breaking news right now. Uber has a new CEO, the name being Dara Khosrau Shahi. And Dara is formerly, or soon to be formerly, the CEO of Expedia, the travel site. So this announcement obviously follows the abrupt resignation of co-founder Travis Kalanick, who left more than 2 months ago. So obviously the question now, is Dara the right man for the job?
Right, and what are his plans for Uber, and like whether or not he's going to look into the culture and the plans moving forward for that company? He was CEO of Expedia since 2005. Quite a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also, he is an immigrant of Iranian descent.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, that's a little fun trivia for you right there. But obviously, you know, the matter at hand right now, if these reports are true, and it's been widely reported now, not just by the New York Times, but also the Bloomberg, Wall Street Journal, etc. You know, so whether or not this new CEO can turn Uber around, right, Sharad? I mean, and you, Sharad, you had problems with Uber this morning. You want to see an end to this nonsense, right? You want Uber to be back on track.
Well, you know, I don't know if the CEO, you know, who sits in a New York or, you know, San Francisco, whatever, is the person really responsible for glitches in terms of transport for individuals. But I think the real issues for Uber to resolve are the question of pricing. I think they've had quite a number of scandals, including, you know, pricing where they displayed a different price for the driver and then a different price for the consumer. And what they did was they basically cheated drivers of an income. And I think those are the real issues. How do they address that in terms of the welfare of their workers? Because, you know, these new technologies and these so-called disruptive technologies and businesses are supposed to be great for everybody, but that's the spiel.
Mm.
The reality might be quite different in terms of the welfare of the individual. It becomes increasingly precarious, and incomes, you know, really fluctuate. Is this fair? Because the terms of your income really change from week to week, right?
Right. This Dara, actually, under him, you can see that his leadership in Expedia, he has made a change there, and he has extended his, the presence of Expedia in more than 60 countries in the world. So definitely, I think he's coming to bring change to Uber. It's just extent of what? And whether he can fix the problems there and fix your problems, Sharad.
Fix your problems, Sharad. You wish. No, but also we got to note that he is the man for the job right now, as opposed to one of the front runners for this top position at Uber being Meg Whitman of HP fame, right? So if you had a woman who is helming Uber, given the kind of sexist claims and allegations of really laddish behavior that was just going out of hand over there, having a woman at the top would totally send a signal out to Silicon Valley and the rest of the world saying that Uber is really intent on really making that about turn. But now, you know, I mean, not to be sexist here, nothing against Mr. And I hope we're pronouncing his name correctly here. So it's Khosrau Shahi, I believe. So, you know, I mean, no offense to him, but, you know, it is an opportunity cost of sorts in terms of sending that message out to Silicon Valley that Uber is serious in trying to, you know, basically, you know, change about its image, at least, you know, how the public perceives them.
Okay, speaking of real results, Putrajaya is set for a bonus year coming from, well, what has been often called with some affection, maybe some criticality, the country's cash cow. Petronas had a stellar financial performance in the first half of this year. Petronas CEO Dato' Wan Zulkifli Wan Arifin says that the national oil giant has approved a higher dividend for government.
In terms of dividend, we did mention that the board approved final dividend of 13 billion ringgit to the government this year. And recently, because of our strong financial performance, the board also approved an interim dividend of another 3 billion ringgit to the government this year, making a total of 16 billion ringgit. This is over installments up till the end of the year.
That was Petronas CEO Dato' Wan Zulkifli Wan Arifin.
All right, so 16 billion ringgit in dividend for the government, which would be on par with last year's figure. So that 3 billion extra, just to kind of give you some context here, that equates to a 7% bonus in terms of this year's total GST collection. So the government expected to collect some 42 billion ringgit via GST this year. You add another 3 billion, so presto, you got a 7% bonus right there. So automatically, you know, the discussion has to, you know, center on the government's fiscal consolidation agenda, right? Because obviously Putrajaya has been on this quest to reduce the fiscal deficit to 3% this year. I'm sure this extra cash will come in handy.
Right, and I think Nomura actually said that even prior to Petronas's announcement, they have said that Malaysia is likely to meet its 2017 fiscal deficit target of 3% of GDP. I mean, what else can Malaysia achieve? I mean, how else can they... What else can help Malaysia achieve our fiscal deficit target, right? And Nomura said that there is scope to cut development spending, which is more discretionary. We also now see a delay in the next general elections to next year, because this must be held, I think, by August 2018, right?
Right.
So versus their previous baseline of September and October this year. So they think that this would elevate election-related spending pressures.
Okay, before we get to the hotter topic of fiscal discipline and whether money is being well spent...
We can bring that up on the grill, right?
We can, yep. In fact. We have Petronas CEO Dato' Wan Zulkifli Wan Arifin again speaking about his outlook on oil prices.
Our year-end projection for Brent is around about 49, is slightly below 50. And for next year, essentially, it will also be around that range. I think there are just many, many factors affecting the oil price. We are more on the conservative side. Everybody looks at the supply side. Personally, I pay quite a bit of attention on the demand side.
That was Petronas CEO Dato' Wan Zulkifli Wan Arifin.
Yeah, and looking at Brent futures right now, at least the most active contract is right now at $52.74 a barrel. So, you know, if Petronas's outlook holds true, you know, I guess, what does this mean for motorists? This means that we can expect to pay about current prices for RON 95, RON 97, again, if, I mean, all else equal. Now, what about the government? You know, perhaps they can expect these kind of dividends, right? 13 to 16 billion ringgit versus the 26 billion ringgit that we saw in 2015. So keeping in mind, initially, at the onset of this year, though, Petronas had wanted to halve its dividend to the government this year compared to 2015's figure.
Right, the higher prices definitely did help their results. If you can see, Petronas's profit after tax jumped 300% to $7 billion. This is just for second quarter of FY2017. This was from $1.7 billion last year. And for the first half, the total 6 months period, the profit after tax increased more than 100% to 17 billion ringgit. So that has definitely helped their results.
Yeah, but also at the same time, it could have been higher if it wasn't for some Forex losses. Also, you had that decision to not continue with that LNG export terminal out of Canada. That decision alone cost Petronas some 1.5 billion ringgit. Now, so that aside, they still posted a 312% on-year gain for their profit after tax for the second quarter.
I mean, is there any chance of future-proofing Petronas against all these uncertainties?
I think Petronas's president and group CEO, Dato' Wan Zulkifli, did say that they're looking to at downstream, focus on downstream stuff. This is to future-proof the business in a way. They say that this is also to mitigate the impact of still low crude oil prices of about $50 per barrel.
Right, and obviously Rapid having a big part to play in that. Also, when it comes to the near-term outlook, or near-to-medium-term outlook, Petronas did say that they are going to focus on some key strategic geographical locations. You know, they cited Southeast Asia, of course, and they're still going to focus on Canada because they still have a huge gas reserves over there. Also, you got to take note, they in Mexico, Petronas recently picked up 3 blocks there. So, but that's I think more on the that is on the upstream stuff. So, geographical focus, also focusing or having a balance when it comes to their upstream and downstream portfolios.
Okay, moving on. That story that we broke here last week about trouble in the AmBank RHB merger talks that, of course, led to that material announcement of talks being called off. Now, Bank Negara has finally spoken about the talks, about how these merger talks have fallen through. They say they don't always, that they do not intervene, rather, in local banking M&A activities. Question is, why do you think, Joyce, Bank Negara has spoken?
Well, it is quite rare for Bank Negara to come out to make a statement like this in relation to specific banks. Usually they make macro statements like on the industry, the operating environment of banks and things like that, or maybe changes in rules or treatment of banking things. But I guess this could be in relation to a local daily story that said that Bank Negara was the only driver pushing the EMMB-RHB merger through. So in their statement, Central Bank says that it does not intervene in the banking M&A activities here, and it also said that, in quotes, the central bank does not and will not interfere with negotiations between any of the parties involved. M&A activities are driven by the market, which is based largely on commercial and business considerations. So basically, they just give approval for the parties to talk, then say, okay, go and negotiate.
And I think those comments were echoed by AmBank's Dato Sulaiman as well, saying that, you know, ultimately it was these discussions between RHB and AmBank, they were not able to find or come to agreement when it comes to the T's and C's of this proposed merger.
And so, terms and conditions.
Yeah, terms and conditions, not tea and coffee. Echoing what the central bank said, right, Joyce?
Right. I think Dato Sulaiman has finally come out officially to deny that there are contingent liabilities linked to 1MDB and AMMB, and that it was one of the causes for the breakdown of merger talks with RHB. He met with the H on Friday, and the story came out on Saturday. So interestingly, H said to him, perhaps the concerns is of a potential liability that may appear in the future, not one that already exists in the accounts. And on this, Sulaiman said that if I don't have something on my table right now, then and nothing that can be quantified, then clearly it's not a matter of concern. Hmm. Yeah, and he also said that as far as he's concerned, he's talking about the contingent liabilities, had nothing to do with the talks being called off, because he said, I don't know what RHB's thoughts are, but as far as I know, it had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, so we got to try and get some comments out of RHB here.
Yeah, but they've been, yeah.
Yeah, well, what we do know is that RHB and AmBank have said, you know, look, now that the merger talks are off, they're going to focus on their respective strategies to, all that good stuff, pursue growth, unlock or maximize value for shareholders, all that good stuff.
AmBank also revealed their first quarter results last week, and they saw net profit rising 1.6% to $328 million. This is for their profit after tax. And their results were driven by top-line growth from business banking, transaction banking, global markets and mortgages.
Okay, we're coming up to the news, and after that we'll have the opening numbers on the stock market and more business news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.